Welcome to Native Fest, celebrating the arts, food, and writing of Minnesota's first people.
And it does take courage, but we're family, and sometimes it's hard to share with your family. But we have a wonderful band of Anishinaabe people here, and this is really great to see the songs and the stories coming from the heart. It's not just about writing, it's about creating. And so we got another creator right here.
Buju Odeo Gichida Indigenous. Back in 85, I really wanted to write about boarding school, my boarding school experiences. But I didn't have hardly any money. I didn't like the idea of going to a publisher because they take, all you end up with is 10%. So I printed up 200 copies. I hand collated them myself. I glued them and I put the cover on them. 200 copies. And then I sold them. I got an article in the Duluth Tribune, St. Paul Pioneer Press. I traveled from Ely to the West Coast, through Seattle, down the coast, through the desert, up through Arizona, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and by spring I was back in Ely. I had left in the fall. I had a lot of adventures along the way. I gave talks at bookstores, I talked at universities. My book became like a key that could open any door. I got to Hopi land and their Kikmangi stopped me. That's their spiritual elders. And they said, "You're here right on time." See, this book is really about the medicine wheel teachings, also behind it. That's the skeleton of it. But I don't address it directly. The stories are woven around it of what happened. They're true stories. They told me, they said, usually men give the medicine wheel talk. But sometimes the Great Spirit does things differently to keep people on their toes, to see if they're really spiritual, if they really respect others and their visions. But I want to share one story with you. It's from boarding school. I had a lot of things happen to me there that were really good. I mean, it was a bad place, and they say, Don Juan said, only one kind of person really benefits from having petty tyrants ruling over you, who have the power of life and death over you. The only one who can really thrive in that is a medicine person, because it tests you. And so I was able to thrive there. There was a nun there. She was in charge of the littlest girls. And when we came in at night into the dormitory to sleep, she would say goodnight and leave, and then at a point she would come tearing in there and grab some innocent kid. And when I was first there, I was the littlest one there. And I saw this for the first time. She came in and went down the aisle and grabbed this little girl and ripped her ear, and blood was squirting everywhere. And without any thought, I charged her and I grabbed her habits and I swung around her like she was a maypole. Then I shot underneath the bed, belly crawled up the beds, underneath them. And then she came after me, because I'm also an Ogichida warrior protector. And I found that out in boarding school, because on my beat, no one's going to get beat up, because my natural instinct is to protect them. And that's what I did for 4 years. I did that to her every time she tried something, and so then eventually I took all the beatings. I was like the whipping boy a king has. Whenever the prince does something bad, they whip the whipping boy. Only I was the whipping girl for all the girls. So I heard it was this Naomi's birthday. I called her Naomi the Dragon. She was a nun with two different colored eyes that would especially like to torture the little girls. This spring, another drama unfolded that would end up to be one of my most cherished memories of this time period in boarding school. I did not understand it intellectually at the time, but understood things in an intuitive way. If my intuition said so, then it was fact. I overheard someone say it was Sister Naomi's birthday. Oh boy, I thought to myself, this is the chance I've been waiting for. I'll get her something that shows her what I really think of her. A symbol that would represent her. And when she saw it, she would see how really mean and evil she is. But what could that be? I walked pensively toward the little girl's playground. It was early in the day, and today was her birthday. I must find the right symbol for her so she will really see herself. Boy, I hope she really cries when she sees it. But I didn't know what that present would be. Something then told me it could be found in the Forbidden Seven Chalk Hills. I started out there, passing the big barns. It would take most of the day. The Chalk Hills were steep to climb, and you had to be careful coming down them, or you could easily lose your footing and tumble to the jagged bottom. In between the first and second Chalk Hills, there was a shaded area with a few scrub trees. I stopped suddenly, seeing an owl just in front of me on the path. He looked sleepy and blinked his huge eyes several times. He did not seem disturbed by my presence, so I continued past him on my way. Clawing the pale, chalky earth, I climbed over the pointed and steep second Chalk Hill. The harder the climb, the greater my determination to make Sister Naomi pay for her crimes by seeing herself as she really was. I knew what I was looking for must be out there. The wheels turned in my brain as I climbed the fourth Chalk Hill. Then before me on a level ground in the center of this fourth Chalk Hill grew some more of those miserable cactus I was periodically getting stuck by. Then it struck me like a thunderbolt. Aha, that's it. She's just like one of those cactus. They were ugly little things, I thought, mean to anyone that came near them. I picked out one I thought looked the meanest and the ugliest. It was a tough one and would not give up its abode in the earth that easily. It was hard to get a hold of because of its stickers. Just like her, I fumed to myself. Boy, when she sees this. Periodically, I would rest and look out from the high elevated land and stare down at the winding muddy river below me. I could see big whirlpools here and there along the shores. This river was sure a desolate looking place, so much different than the lakes and islands of my father's people. I'd gaze to the north and imagine it was where the river must end. We were somewhere near the end of a big river in the middle of I knew not where. And all I knew was that it was a hell of a lot of white marks on the black asphalt road to get here. The sun had been beating down on my sweaty body all day when the cactus finally gave up its hold on the earth. I fell with it jumping to stick me again. My determination grew stronger because I was halfway there. I dragged it back with me, holding it away from me to avoid its stickers. But when I slid down to climb the Chalk Hills, it would always manage to stick me. Each time I would curse the nun again and gleefully imagine her reaction and how she would see herself or how mean she really was. I anxiously scrambled up and down the Chalk Hills and ran back to the place where the barns were. It was getting late in the day, for the sun was arched halfway between the top of the sky and the earth. I was winded, so I walked back to the main building past the little girl's playground and kitchen entrance very slowly and tired. I was covered with dust and hoped no one would see me except for Sister Naomi. Sure enough, as I entered the little girl's playroom unobserved, no one was there except for her. I hoped she would be so hurt by my birthday gift that she would run bawling to Mother Superior and that she would cry for days. With a glint in my eye, I rushed in quickly saying, "Happy birthday!" loudly as I presented it to her. The prickly cactus hung in the air before her stunned two different colored eyes. Its dirty little roots and thorns protruded toward her. I halfway expected a good clout for getting my clothes all dirty and being gone so long. She was aghast and broke out into loud, wailing sobs. She wavered, almost like she would fall over, and slowly took the cactus and choked out through streaming tears, "You're the first one who has ever thought of me on my birthday." Saying this, she hurried away with the cactus held close to her heart. Her muffled sobs died in her footsteps as she disappeared. I stood there a long time with my mouth gaping open. Then I knew, no matter how mean she was, I could never really hate her. I did not understand intellectually at the time that she was mean because no one ever loved her, but I felt it deeply and intuitively. I also knew that because I could not hate her, it didn't mean she would walk all over me either. The right to freedom would not be put under for anything. Later, when my understanding of the white culture grew, this incident was a vital key toward understanding the inherited subconscious memory patterns of the people who first met the Indians and settled this country. It explained their brutality and inability to live harmoniously with nature in a loving, giving way. One incapable of such peace responds with violence because he cannot reciprocate. What is true on an individual level is true on a mass level.
Native Fest is a production of the Net Lake Radio Project, made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. Online at kbft.org.